Welcome, everyone, to Family Talk. It's a ministry of the James Dobson Family Institute, supported by listeners just like you. I'm Dr. James Dobson, and I'm thrilled that you've joined us.
Welcome to Family Talk, the broadcast division of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. I'm Roger Marsh. Have you ever wondered how a couple can have a successful marriage? If you're married and you and your spouse are more like roommates conducting the business of the family, well, turn this program all the way up. God intended for your marriage to be a Christ-centered partnership filled with deep connection, love, and intimacy. On today's classic program, Dr. Dobson is joined by his guests Bill and Pam Farrell, and they'll be discussing the subject of marital intimacy. God wants us to strengthen every part of our marriages, and developing more intimacy with your spouse is an important part of that. So if you have little ones around, you might want to put some headphones on for this one, or listen to the show from our website at a later time. Now, our guests today here on Family Talk, Bill and Pam Farrell, have authored over 40 books, including the bestseller, Men Are Like Waffles and Women Are Like Spaghetti. They are international speakers, best-selling authors, and relationship experts who are also the founders of the Love Wives Ministry, which seeks to build stronger marriages. Bill and Pam Farrell have three grown children and a growing number of grandchildren as well. Now, the Farrells use humor and relatable personal stories to help couples understand how to communicate better and develop stronger intimacy that will carry a marriage through for a lifetime. In fact, today's broadcast is based on their best-selling book with the provocative title, Red Hot Monogamy. So let's join Dr. James Dobson and Bill and Pam Farrell right here, right now, on Family Talk.
We sat and talked in my office before coming down here. And Pam, you said you've been listening to us for a long time.
Oh, I'm going to get emotional again every time I say this. But Bill and I come from pretty broken backgrounds. And we look at our marriage ministry now and our happy marriage. And we credit you, Dr. Dobson, because even as engaged couples and newlyweds, we watched your, you know, film series and raised our kids on all your books. And so it's just a delight.
That was the first film series, really started it all. Mm-hmm. And you were out there watching, and now here you are as a guest on the program all these years.
So I hope it's encouraging that the fruit remains from your wonderful ministry.
Well, you're doing a great job. You're speaking. You have conferences all over the country, speak at churches. Pam, did you ever think that you all would be in a ministry to married couples?
It is really a miracle. That Bill and I feel like our marriage is a miracle. And actually, the title of our book, Red Hot Monogamy, happened at our 25th wedding anniversary. Our friend Anita Renfro.
You really want to tell us about this?
I do. It's a cute little story. So our friend Anita Renfro came out, and she was doing the music for our celebration for our anniversary. And she stood up, and she's like, "We're here to celebrate Pam and Bill's righteous red hot monogamy." And we had just contracted to do a book on marital intimacy. And the whole table looked at us and said, "That's the title." Anita came down, and she said, "You can use that for a title." And right after that, our son Brock got up.
Our oldest son got up to pray over the food. And he said, "Hi, I'm Brock Farrell, and I'm the first product of my parents' righteous red-hot monogamy."
Surely kids often about the fact that I reveal everything in our relationship and that we only have three secrets left. And if I ever reveal one of those, she's out of here. She said that one night, and Ryan was then asked to speak, and he came to the microphone. And he said, "Yeah, they've only got three secrets, and I'm one of them."
So, oh, that's so cute.
But you said, Pam, a minute ago that you all came out of broken homes yourself.
We did.
What was that like, and how did you come together?
I am the daughter of an alcoholic, and my daddy loved me, and he sacrificed greatly for me. But he had a pain deep in his heart, and he chose to answer that pain with alcohol rather than a relationship with God. And because of that, he had this underlying anger and rage issues. So I never knew who I was going to get when I got home, whether it be Jekyll or Hyde. Yeah. And so I grew up in this very volatile home. But God was so gracious that my mom's best friend was the secretary of a little teeny tiny church. And my mom had all kinds of spiritual questions. Neither of my parents were believers. And my mom said, "Kathy, you have some things in your life that I really love." She was seeing things like love, joy, the fruit of the Spirit, basically.
Sure.
And Kathy's like, why don't you come to church and bring the kids? And so that began my introduction to Christianity. When I was 8 years old, a pastor came in and said, who wants to learn more about Jesus? And I'm like, oh, I think it'll be at Christmas because of that guy. Okay, I'll go to your classes. Uh-huh. And I was memorizing Matthew 5, 6, and 7 to have a place on Bible quiz team. And my parents were arguing because my dad had been drinking. And I had just memorized Psalm 23, and they gave me this little cross that glowed in the dark. And on it says, he lives. And so I was sitting there memorizing Matthew 5, 6, and 7, and I came across this verse, and it says, if you ask, you shall receive. If you seek, you'll find. If you knock, the door will be opened to you. And I remember praying, Jesus, does that mean if I ask you to come into my life, that you would be my best friend, my Savior, my Lord? Because that's what I want. And just then my dad was like out of control, and it got real scary. So I shut off the light, and across the room, that little cross was glowing in the dark.
Oh,
and I prayed, Jesus, the pastor says that you're bigger than anything, that you're stronger than anything, you're more powerful than death itself. If that is true, and I believe that it is, I want you to come into my life and make me the kind of woman that you designed me to be. And I want to grow up in a house, not like this house where that's full of rage and anger. I want to grow up in a house and have a family that's full of love and joy and peace and patience and kindness. And so please come into my life. And P.S. God, if you could arrange it, I'd like to marry a pastor someday. Amen.
Did you? And you were eight?
And I was eight, almost nine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I believe that God answered the cries of that little girl's heart, you know, both those requests to my pastor husband.
Bill, what were you doing at that time?
Well, I grew up in a home, my mom was the dominant personality in my home, very high energy, very strong personality, but had been through some very difficult things in her growing up years. And as a result, her life was run by fear. And if you can imagine being afraid of it, my mom was afraid of it. And it just continued to escalate throughout my life. And I was the third youngest in the family. So I had watched my brother and sister fight with my mom. And my conclusion was they didn't nearly have the energy my mom had, so they lost every argument they ever had.
Mm-hmm.
So I went the other direction. I just kind of shut things down in my life. And I became non-responsive to my mom, non-responsive to a lot of things in life, because that's kind of where my protection was. And found a refuge in sports in high school. And figured that if I was real busy in sports, I wouldn't have to be home. And not thinking much about life, but just as lost could be. And my sophomore year in high school, a good friend of mine said, hey, Bill, you want to spend the night at my house? And my dad's going to take us to a new movie that's out. And I said, well, sure, what's the movie? And he said, well, the movie's The Exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to that movie with this friend of mine, and I took the high school athlete attitude. I can handle it. No matter what you throw at me, I can handle it. And when I sat in that movie and started watching this depiction of something that I knew, I'd heard it was based on something true, even though I knew Hollywood certainly had overdone it. But as I was sitting in that movie theater, I realized nobody ever told me about this world. And I know nothing about what I'm watching, but I've heard it's based on something true. And then the other thought that got me is I looked at the girl on the screen and I said, I can't see any difference between her and me. So if anything like that could happen to her, what would keep it from happening to me? And I had no answers. And when I got home, I had nobody to ask because I knew my mom didn't know. My dad had just kind of gone passive in the situation, and my mom had isolated our life down because of fear. So I didn't know any pastors. I didn't know anybody I'd consider a mentor. But my mom grew up in Georgia, so I had a Bible. So I started reading the Bible. I started sleeping with the Bible. And 30 days after I saw the movie up four or five times every night, I read 1 John 4:4. It says, greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. And the light went on. Mm. And so—
How old were you?
I was 16. And I knew my brother had prayed some kind of a prayer a couple months before. So I went to his room. I said, how do you do this? And he said, well, if you admit you're a sinner and you need a Savior and you ask Jesus to come into your life and forgive you for what you've done and give you eternal life, he'll do it. So I went, good enough. So I went back to my room, got on my knees, prayed that prayer, and I was hoping for the big light show. You know, I wanted angels and bells and whistles, and none of that happened. But I slept through the night that night for the first time since I'd seen the movie. And I got up the next morning and I realized something has happened in my heart. And I started chasing Jesus at that point, trying to figure out what he had done.
Well, you know, this is a very good place to start our discussion of marriage, because in essence, you both brought baggage,
yes,
a lot of it, into the relationship.
Oh, yeah.
That affects the sexual relationship as well as every other aspect. So when you're speaking to couples out there, you have to begin with the assumption that they didn't start at the same place. They started in a hole. They started, with experiences from childhood that are still with them. And you almost have to begin with that before you get to the physiological aspect of sexual relations, don't you?
Exactly. Knowing that people have baggage brings a heart of compassion. And so we come knowing that we were broken and we have a great Redeemer. So God can redeem anything that you give to Him.
Did you have difficulties in the early days?
You know, we were so privileged to have met through Campus Crusade for Christ at a leadership conference. So that was like a good starting point. And then we were mentored in seminary by Jim and Sally Conway. We had some good mentors that really helped us. And so we could have been a lot worse off.
And we had some great pretty dramatic moments.
Oh, yeah. Like, I was a drama queen totally the first couple years of marriage because, I mean, I had this huge vacuum in my heart and insecurities running. And so... So Bill, okay, this is just an example that I usually don't confess to, talk about secrets, but okay, on my honeymoon, you know, the last night of our honeymoon before we're going to a reception in Idaho, we got a romantic, you know, dinner, then we do what honeymooners usually do, and then I start talking about every boyfriend I've ever had since kindergarten, and I mean, it's like 1 a.m, and you know, every once in a while I'd be like, you're awake, you still love me, right? You're awake.
I'm doing my best to try to listen to all this, but my eyes are kind of rolling back in my head, but you know, I'm trying to make sure she's important to me.
So he falls asleep about 2:30 in the morning, and I'm like, "You don't love me anymore." He's like, "Oh yeah, I do." And so he sat up, and then from that moment on, I like sang every country and western song I knew growing up, and it ended with me standing on the bed singing "Stand by Your Man." I mean, I was pathetic.
You know what? You know what? This is the honest truth. You can't tell those stories often because they're too intimate and too personal. But it's a shame that you can't, because nearly everybody has a funny, meaningful honeymoon story.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
And I'm going to tell you mine. Only it's not sexual in nature, but we were in a very cheap hotel, which is the only place we could find because San Francisco was completely sold out. They had a big convention there, and there were two drunk ladies next door to us, and they were shouting and screaming, and we couldn't sleep, and it got very irritating about 3 o'clock in the morning, and my little feminine wife went to the window and raised it and shouted out, "Pipe down, you hags!" And I wonder, what have I married here? This is my introduction to a very different side of Shirley. Yes. But, you know, everybody's got a story there.
Oh, yeah.
And some of them would be hilarious if we could ever put them into a book.
There you go. Publishing wing.
Yeah, and it would be X-rated, I'm afraid. You obviously learn to accommodate each other.
Well, one of the things we're trying to tell people is nobody has a perfect marriage.
Right.
And those things that you don't get right along the way become some of your best stories.
Yeah.
You know, you laugh about them, and if you can keep your sense of humor and you can realize that this is a growing experience, that nobody's got it right, even though the media shows us all working well, the reality of it is, you know, we tell people sometimes marital intimacy is the greatest thing on earth, and sometimes your response is, well, that was awkward.
Yeah.
Because the reality of it is it's just a very live relationship, and it exposes everything. So it can be a great moment of healing. You know, I know there's times when, you know, Pam and I had the hopes of being intimate, but what it turned into was a big discussion about how do we overcome the influences of our past, and how do we make sure the hurts don't get in the way of our relationship?
Mm.
And often that is the gift that people need, not so much the physical act itself.
You know, in our prayer prior to going on the air, I prayed and thank God for this gift of marriage. It is a marvelous thing that was given to Adam and Eve in the garden right from the beginning, before the institution of the church, before the institution of government, the institution of marriage was given. But it is such a marvelous gift. How come it's so much hard work? You know, you got to work at it. You got to build it. And sometimes you build from scratch. What? How you answer that?
Well, I think the first reason why it's hard work is because it's such a clear picture of the gospel. So it's under spiritual attack.
Especially the intimate part. You know, sexuality is in a reflection of God loving, you know, the church. And so, of course, Satan wants to take it over and, like, twist it and deform it. But God gave red-hot monogamy as a gift to marriage couples. Oftentimes I say, you know, sex was God's secret a long time before it was Victoria's secret. You know, so let's reclaim the gift.
We're talking to Bill and Pam Farrell, and they have written a book, a number of them, but the one we're talking about today, Red Hot Monogamy, Making Your Marriage Sizzle. And that's it's pretty racy stuff. Now, what is red hot monogamy? I mean, we could guess, but why don't you tell us?
Right.
Well, we're trying to get the message out that the best sexual relationships are in marriage. We live in a culture that tells us that the new, the forbidden is the exciting stuff. But all the studies are proving all the best sexual relationships are in marriage. Couples who pray together are more satisfied with their love life than people who don't. People who attend church are more satisfied with their love life than people who don't attend church. People who are in accountability groups, whether it's small groups or it's Bible studies or they just get together on a regular basis to help each other figure this thing out, they have better marriages and they rate their satisfaction with their love life is higher. And we're trying to get the message out that the absolute best way to have a great intimate relationship is to commit to a lifelong marriage and to work at it and do it well.
And yet the statistics show, and this is in your book, that the number one sexual problem that people have is boredom. So you've got to do some things to circumvent boredom.
Right.
And your book is filled with those kinds of suggestions.
Yeah, we do try to have, there's 200 red hot romantic ideas laced through the book. So if you just hit that moment, like, you know, a Valentine's or an anniversary or birthday, it's like, oh, I want to do something that's fun or new or different. At least there's some ideas to help you think outside the box, maybe. And then also, Red Hot Monogamy is based to be an 8-week, make your marriage a priority, make this part of your marriage a priority. And so there's discussion questions at the end of every chapter. And not just discussion questions, but what we call hands-on homework. Pun totally intended. And that's homework that you want to do as a couple. And so what we're saying to couples is, you know what, turn off the TV and make your love life a priority. And you'll be surprised how that will fan the flame on your love life.
This culture mitigates against meaningful sex, doesn't it?
Yes.
Because we're exhausted. We're worn out. And there are so many other things on our minds. And it's easy for days and weeks and even months to roll on without really focusing on one another. If I had to characterize your book, I think it would be to take the time to focus on the other person.
That's right.
Is that accurate?
Well,
one
of the things we learned early on in our relationship is that if you want to have a great relationship, you have to be deliberate. It doesn't happen by accident. And it started back when we were dating because I didn't know what to do. All I knew is I don't want a relationship like what I saw growing up, and I don't want a relationship that doesn't work. So I used to have a notebook of questions that I would just go to Pam and
say, I didn't answer them all in my film series.
Well,
this is before the film series. I would just go to Pam and I say, Pam, what do you think about this? And what do you think about this? And what do you think about this? And what it taught us was that if we were deliberate, life would go better.
And if we dialogued over those key areas, our relationship worked. So to invest, you reap the investment.
So if you want to have a good romantic sexual relationship, you need to schedule it and be deliberate about it. And this is designed to help couples do that, to actually put it in your calendar and focus.
And we encourage couples to, you know, put a little code down in your calendar. We use RHM, Red Hot Monogamy. So if somebody comes to us and says, oh, you know, I really need an appointment with you, in our Outlook, we can look and we're like, oh, well, I already have a prior engagement. Well, they don't know what RHM means unless they're right now listening. So we can say, oh, I have a prior engagement. I'll have to do that, you know, tomorrow or the next day. And I have a light at the end of my tunnel every week to say, you know what, there's going to be some really great red hot moments with my husband, something to look forward to. I didn't get married to Bill just to pay college bills and mortgages together. I looked forward to red hot romance.
You know what, in my counseling that I found is that there's a lot of fear in the sexual relationship.
Yes.
Everybody knows it's important. Everybody knows that if you mess it up, It could really affect your marriage and maybe even destroy it. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows there's a right way and a wrong way, and they don't know for sure what is really the right way.
Right.
And then there is that just that awesome responsibility. Yeah, I'm supposed to be passionate 8 times a week, and I'm not. And it really is almost impossible in this culture, I think, to come up through the adult years without experiencing some very negative emotions about the sexual relationship, even when you love the other person.
Right.
Yes. It's a shame. It's a wonderful gift.
Right.
And you've dedicated yourselves to making it what God intended it to be, haven't you?
We sure try. And for the couples that have had pain or hurt or maybe made some poor choices along the way, what we encourage them to do, Red Hot Manangwe has a variety of different weekends away, you know, it planned out times together. And one of the best things that couples can do is just to get at the foot of the bed and hold hands and pray and just say, God, we didn't do everything right. We're sorry. You know, we wish we would have had this information sooner. But you know, this is where we are today. We're before you. We're
Some
on our knees.
Some people would
want
see that as real spooky, that, you know, the sexual relationship is racy at best, and you're going to bring God into this? You know, we bring these cultural attitudes.
That's right.
And yet, being able to pray together is a way of opening your heart to each other, isn't it?
Right.
Well, it's one of the most intimate things a couple ever does, because it's hard to be a phony in prayer. And what happens when you pray together is you see into each other's hearts and you begin to fall in love all over again. And we've done a lot of work with singles along the way too. And we tell single couples, you shouldn't spend a lot of time praying together, just the two of you, because it's so intimate. It actually raises temptation.
And, you know, one of the biblical terms for red hot monogamy, I mean, you don't see red hot monogamy in the Bible, easy
to
know.
No, I don't recall that.
Yeah. Instead, it's, you know, to know.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but you think about that. Well, we're out of time, so we can't think about it long, but we'll do it next time. But the Bible refers to sexual intercourse as knowing the person, your eyes open to who that person is through the sexual relationship. That's why it is important to get it right.
It is. Yes.
And to spend the time figuring out how to do that. But we're off to a good start. Pam, Bill, Farrell, it's a pleasure to have you all here and to have your book, Red Hot, no, not Red Hot Mama. It's Red Hot Monogamy is the title. I bet you've had some fun with that title.
The funniest one is Red Hot Mahogany. We're like, not that.
Thanks for being with us today, and we'll pick it up right here next time.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, what a great conversation for any couple, whether you've just gotten hitched or you've been united in marital bliss for many, many years. You've been listening to our own Dr. James Dobson here on Family Talk with authors Bill and Pam Farrell, and they're just getting started. Be sure to join us again tomorrow for why even little getaways are so important for couples. You'll also hear some advice from the Bible, too. Now, if you'd like to listen to today's program again, all you have to do is visit our website at drjamesdobson.org/family talk. Now, if you're a parent, you know the demands of children can put a pressure on a marriage, and parenting is certainly not for the faint of heart. Even children who are sweet and mild-mannered for most of the time come with their own set of challenges every now and again. But if your son or daughter is strong-willed and defiant, well, that child can literally wear you out emotionally and put added stress on your marriage. Here at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute, we want to come alongside you during these important child-rearing years. We've developed a new 10-day email series based on Dr. Dobson's best-selling book called The New Strong-Willed Child. This resource is designed to equip you to wisely lead your kids through even the toughest of trials. Now, to sign up, remember, it's absolutely free. Just go to our website at drjamesdobson.org/strong-willed child. Well, be sure to join us again tomorrow for the conclusion of Dr. Dobson's powerful conversation with Bill and Pam Farrell as they share more advice to bring red-hot monogamy to your marriage. You definitely won't want to miss it. Till then, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for joining us today here on Family Talk. Be sure to tune in again next time.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
If your marriage seems to have lost the old spark lately, maybe it's time to make a few changes.
Here's Dr. James Dobson for Family Talk.
You know, over the years, I've watched many happily married couples become bored and dissatisfied with each other simply because they forgot to take time out for fun. Without it, the never-ending responsibilities of adult life can become oppressive and deadening to a marriage. But to let it continue is to sacrifice something precious in your relationship. You can prevent that from happening by making a conscious effort to put four simple ingredients back into your lives. First, make a date with your spouse this week and leave the children at home. Now, I'm not talking about an expensive night out on the town necessarily. The point is just to get away for a short while and get to know each other again. Next, take time out for surprises. A note tucked in a briefcase or a phone call to say, "I'm thinking of you." Third, reserve some of your time and energy for a meaningful sexual relationship. Fatigue and overcommitment are destroyers of erotic behavior, even among people who love and care for one another. And finally, try to remember that the most successful marriages are those where the husband and wife respect each other and communicate that respect every day that they're together.